Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
Well, Paul, if I'm looking at your deal right, good morning. I'm Mike Dover with you, and joining me on the phone is Paul Gissing with the Rio Grande Foundation. If I'm looking at this right, Paul, you're speaking to me from Ruidoso.
I am indeed.
How about that? So getting in any skiing up there, Ski Apache?
No, they're only, as I understand it, they're open just like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or something involving the weekend.
Wow.
I would have to go back and confirm that, but to my knowledge, they were not open here while I'm in town. And we did get 5 inches or thereabouts of snow. And I was speaking to the Lincoln County Republicans last night at their meeting. So got to share a lot of things that we talk about here on this program with the Lincoln County GOP group.
And anything exciting going on? Did they happen to bring up about the legislation to legalize drop boxes and outlaw protesting or questioning elections here in New Mexico?
Well, we certainly talked about that, and I shared with them, you know, some of the problems with that particular bill, that's HB4. Unfortunately, that one definitely seems to be on the move. So it's one of many bills to be concerned about.
Well, I tell you what, that is one definitely to be concerned about, because from my standpoint, and you tell me if I'm wrong, that violates a whole lot of constitutional parameters there.
Constitution, common sense, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Yeah, drop boxes. Not something that, makes sense from a vote integrity standpoint. And, you know, this is, regardless of what you think about the results of last year's elections nationwide, but that's kind of the mindset. It seems like the Democrats want to make it so easy to vote that you can create a fraudulent system, whereas most people, I think, generally would like to see a process that has integrity, but also is relatively straightforward. The HB4 is definitely pushing the envelope and trying to make it make the obstacles to vote less and less in the state of New Mexico, to the point where you'll have real concerns about the integrity of the vote.
Well, yeah, considering that the way this is going to allow people to vote 2, 3, 4, 5 times, and dead people vote, and people who aren't even citizens vote, and just all kinds of things. This is nothing more than just another example of a power grab by the Democrat Party.
It is, and obviously this issue will allow there's other provisions, a permanent absentee vote list, whatever that means. You know, how do you track a list that's permanent and make sure that it's up to date? Because that's what this is all about, making sure that you have accurate voter lists, whether, you know, you call them permanent or not, which they nothing should be permanent. But it's the process here that could allow one party rule in New Mexico really for the foreseeable future. Once you get control of the voting system and the levers of voting, you really can make the system work to your advantage. And it's a problematic bill, and definitely one of the ones that we need to encourage folks to reach out and vote, have their legislators educated on.
Yeah, and I think the part that really concerns me the most is the part that makes it illegal to protest or question the vote count.
Yeah, you know, and of course, if the shoe were on the other foot, as we've seen, at least in Washington and at the national level, it's not just Republicans who have questioned the integrity of the vote. We saw a lot of that on the Democratic side in the wake of the 2016 election, which Trump won. It only became impolitic to question the voting system and vote totals once that was Trump doing it, and once Republicans were the party that seemed to have questions. I am not, you know, the world's foremost expert on all aspects of voting and whether the vote has integrity or not. I am aware, for example, in one of my episodes of Tipping Point New Mexico with Drew Johnson, who is a personal friend of mine and has been involved in public policy fights going back now close to two decades. He ran for Clark County Commission up in Nevada, and they have enacted these mail-in voting and drop box procedures. And he said that, you know, vote harvesting, where you have, you know, politically biased interest groups going around and collecting ballots and then dropping them off. And, you know, they're going to target, of course, areas where their people live, and they're going to try to use that money in that ground game to manipulate the process. That's the end game of where this is all going. Again, even if it's not outright fraud and manipulating of the votes, you are manipulating the vote through your grassroots muscle and these third party organizations that are funded by who knows what to go ahead and physically get the votes and move the process in your favor. So, yeah, whether you consider this outright fraud or just manipulation of the process, it's all very concerning.
Well, I guess it opens me up to start a new business called Voter Collection Services. You vote, we'll collect it, and don't worry, we'll take care of it. So,
there you go.
Well, Friday the 17th marks 1 year since Governor Lou Anne Grisham ended New Mexico's mask mandate. You know what, Paul? About 2 months before that, I ended it myself.
Yeah, a lot of us ended it on our own terms. But,
yeah.
Yes, on that would be also, by the way, Friday the 17th, the midpoint of the 2023 session. If you'll recall, that mask mandate was ended on the last day of the 30-day session last
year. Yes, that's right.
So just for those of you who are tracking the days of this legislative session, counting down those days perhaps. And to that effect, of course, you know, Michelle Lujan Grisham and New Mexico were among the states that were very restrictive when it came to COVID-19 from the very beginning. But a new report from the Cochrane Review, which is it's a meta study. What they do is they take other studies, they analyze them, and they figure out whether the bulk of these reports make it clear that they were effective, the masks in this case, or whether they were ineffective. And this Cochrane Review is considered to be the gold standard of these kinds of analyses. And the latest report says masks make little or no difference on COVID-19 or flu rates. So we'll still probably be having this debate for a while, but I've never seen any real world evidence. And that's the key. You can stick some people in a lab, make sure that they have the mask put firmly over their face and expose them to a virus, and you might get some kind of result there. But real-world people wearing masks in real-world situations, out and about at the grocery store or whatever activities they were doing, there's no evidence, according to this gold standard study of masking, that that it works. So, you know, it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise to anybody who lived through COVID with a skeptical approach, but it's something that is a brand new report.
You know, I've always wondered, did they ever figure it out that was the mask to prevent you from getting it or to prevent you from spreading it?
I understood that it was supposedly about spreading it, but again, that's an open question. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it was particularly effective in either way.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, hey, Paul, are we going to get another 0.25% reduction in our gross tax receipts?
We're certainly hopeful. And
yeah, a whole 0.25%. The
0.25% is lovely, and we certainly advocate for that. But HB 367 is kind of the, if you will, gold standard of the tax reforms that we've been talking about. And the impressive thing, I'll say it right out front, is that Michelle Lujan Grisham has publicly supported this particular tax reform. And the issue with the gross receipts tax is that both applied at high rates and it has this approach to services and other business inputs that is very, you know, it very much hostile. It leads to pyramiding of the taxes on top of other taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a serious issue for small businesses to want to be in New Mexico. So HB 367 would do both of those things. It would slice another 0.25% off the GRT, but more importantly, it would address the pyramiding problem. I'm not going to say for once and for all, but this is a bill that is really going to, I think, finally open up our tax code and make it less hostile to those small businesses by addressing pyramiding in a fundamental way and making New Mexico less of a challenge for small businesses to operate in by exempting the business-to-business tax aspect of the gross receipts tax from taxation. So, you know, this would make it much, much more like a traditional sales tax than it is currently, and it would make New Mexico a much better state for people to come to, do business, start a business, whatever it may be, and grow that business and hopefully stay here and make the small business of today the big business of tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when we're talking about eliminating the pyramiding of the business to business, you know, one aspect I see of that is you have a lot of businesses out there that, you know, have their expenses of cost of doing business. And one of them is advertising, like with radio stations, like our commercial stations.
Yep.
And we have to charge sales tax on those professional services to businesses that are paying sales tax, but they have to pay us sales tax. And that is one example of, I think, would be a good thing to eliminate, eliminating the professional service sales tax on stuff.
Yeah, advertising is one fundamental way that tax is applied and harms small businesses and something that needs to be addressed for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully this bill makes its way through the process and we get fundamental tax reform. And like I said, the governor has come out in support of it. The entities that are so far issuing their opposition are city governments, especially big cities like Albuquerque, who are afraid they may lose some revenue on the deal. Reminiscent of the food tax, grocery tax issue during the Richardson administration, where there was a hold harmless adopted to do that, and that became a debacle later on in New Mexico political discussions and whatnot. But hopefully this is not the, you know, not an issue in this particular debate.
There you go. Well, let's get into the next one, because I got a story here this morning that on January 24th, the New Mexico Environment Department received a request for a 60-day extension of the WIP renewal draft permit comment period by 14 individuals representing 11 organizations. Some reasons were given, but now they're extending it to a full 120 days. Is that similar to what we're going to be talking about here about the legislation targeting nuclear storage facility passes in New Mexico.
Well, WIP is a existing facility that primarily takes in low-level nuclear waste out of Los Alamos National Lab. And by low-level, I mean like the suits that people would wear in a facility that has high-level nuclear waste, that garment, that nuclear, you know, protection suit would be placed in a low-level facility like WIP. This is for, I'm told, medium-level nuclear waste, spent nuclear fuel, things that really are integral to the process of generating electricity from the nuclear process itself. And there's legislation that's moving, specifically Senate Bill 53. That bill was approved by the Senate. It was largely a party line vote. A couple of Democrats moved over to the Republican side, but that's not enough. You got to have a lot of Democrats move to the Republican side. It was approved 21-13 on Monday. It would attempt to prohibit the federal government from granting permits for a nuclear waste disposal site unless the state consents and other conditions are met. So right now, it's pretty much a partisan issue in terms of this facility. It's under proposed to be under the control of a company called Holtec. And the idea is to build that facility in the same general area of the state as WIP, far southeast New Mexico. Those communities are very interested in the jobs and investments and the economic potential. From the Rio Grande Foundation perspective, that's certainly part of the attraction. But the big attraction is that, you know, we have this massive push to zero carbon energy creation, electricity generation, and the environmental groups, the self-professed environmental supporters like Jeff Steinborn, who's a senator from Doniana County, who has sponsored this bill, they want to kill a storage facility for nuclear waste. And you know, that's one of the key issues with deploying nuclear power across this country. It's finding a good way to store the spent nuclear fuel. So this bill is an attempt to undermine that in New Mexico. It's something that I know that the governor has supported, and you know, I'm not saying it's a done deal in the House by any stretch of the imagination, but it does seem like the Democrats, you know, who claim to want zero carbon electricity, also want to kill the storage of spent nuclear fuel and the jobs and economic development that that would entail. So, very unfortunate, but kind of the hypocrisy of this issue is quite impressive on the Democratic side of things, and we'll see how the process goes.
Oh, absolutely. Well, minimum wage index bill failed. Tell me about this. This looks interesting.
Yeah, well, we talked a few weeks ago before the session even got rolling about HB 25, which would have raised our already high minimum wage, $12 an hour, to 16 and indexed that to inflation moving forward. That was Christine Chandler. Another bill, HB 28, was introduced by Miguel Garcia, Albuquerque state rep, just to index it to inflation in the out years. So taking the $12 and moving it along with inflation. I have to admit that, you know, you just don't know where these Democrats are, you know, coming down on some of these issues, what drives them, because, you know, we did just see a pretty significant increase in the minimum wage over the last several years, from 2019 to 2022, $7.50 an hour to $12 an hour. And I guess that's why they are willing to stop this particular increase in the minimum wage, because the both of these bills at this point seem to be dead. HB 28, the just indexing bill, was tabled in committee, and generally that means dead. You never know. They could always drag these things off the table or choose to move one or something else in the form of a dummy bill forward. But at this point, midway through the session, it looks unlikely that a minimum wage increase or minimum wage indexing will pass this session. So that's some good news, and I'll admit it's something I'm pleasantly surprised about, because these progressive legislators tend to support this kind of policy.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, your next point about the Rio Grande Foundation is data highlighting the fact that New Mexico's legislature has become increasingly partisan in recent years. To me, this defines what you're talking about. Albuquerque Representative, a news item I have today, Albuquerque Representative Charlotte Little, Marion Matthews, and three other Democrats voted to block HB 55, common sense legislation to fight back against organized retail crime. And then this other statement: the people of Albuquerque should be outraged at what is going on in Santa Fe. These progressives simply do not care about crime in our city, State Representative Bill Boehm from Albuquerque said. Republican crime bills are repeatedly voted down by Democrats, then reintroduced under a Democrat sponsor. Now, if that isn't the height of hypocrisy and partisanship, I don't know what is.
Yeah, attempting to take credit for good ideas is, and by killing Republican bills and replacing them with Democrat bills, is definitely partisanship at its very worst. We, as part of our Freedom Index tracking of legislation, our software, and this is public, you can go to billtrack50.com/state/NM. But if you don't do that, I can describe exactly where things are going. Now, you know, remember, as recently as 2015, 2016, we had a Republican governor, a Republican legislature. Even at that point, Republicans alone were only able, were passing in 2015, 47% of the bills. Democrats alone were passing 44%, 52% Republicans in 2016. These are bills that make their way onto being enacted, and then 38% for Democrats. So somewhat even there, even though the Republicans were in an upswing situation. Nowadays, and I'm not going to talk about 2023, I'm going to talk about 2022, so last year's session, 77% of the bills enacted were sponsored by Democrats alone, and there were just one bill sponsored by a Republican, and I haven't gone back and checked out which bill that was in 2022 that passed and was enacted. And then you had 14 bills, 21% of them being bipartisan. So we've moved dramatically during the Lujan Grisham administration to being much more one-party rule. And that includes whose bills make their way through the process in the legislature to enactment. It's not a surprise. I do wonder what it would be like if Republicans had control. I suspect that you would have a little more willingness to hear some Democrat concepts, but we're a long way in this state from Republicans having a trifecta, which means the governor in both houses of the legislature. So for the meantime, what we see is that if a bill passes almost without exception, just one last year, you really need, at the very least, bipartisan sponsorship. Democrat-only bills are the ones that have the best chance of moving forward, though.
Yeah, and you can tell that in committees, because if it's bipartisan with two on there, two of each on there, or Democrat or a Republican bill, they're usually voted down 5-4 or 4-1. So that's what we're seeing. Democrat bills are coming out 5-0 approved. So, you know, it's just interesting to see how that's all playing out up there. So, well, you know, this next one, Paul, kind of surprises me. as much as after the COVID pandemic and we had a hard time getting state people back to work, I'm surprised that New Mexico ranks a mediocre 31st for remote work. I figured we'd be right up there at the top.
Well, just to be clear, remote work is not just for state government employees. In fact, we're talking about the legislative and legal procedures around anybody working remotely.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially, you know, that could be, in the case of New Mexico, somebody who worked for, say, a big IT firm, Facebook or Google being potentials, but, you know, could be bigger or smaller up there in the Bay Area, deciding that, hey, you know, they're allowing me to work remotely for the rest of my career or however long I work at this company. I'll work wherever I want to, and choosing New Mexico. Now, New Mexico has a lot going for it outside of the public policy sphere when it comes to states like California, or nowhere near as high of taxes or cost of living. We have our own flaws and foibles, the education system, the crime rate, but this report specifically looks at kind of how the tax situation in New Mexico applies to those who would like to work remote. We ranked 31st, which is kind of sort of in the middle of the pack. As the authors of the report from National Taxpayers Union Foundation, state, any state that does not have a personal income tax, one of those nine, those are all the most friendly places to work, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're, again, think that California model, if you're a high earner, I believe California's top rate on the personal income is 13.3%. If you're one of those highly paid employees and you move to Washington State, Wyoming, Florida, Texas, Tennessee, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Nevada, or Alaska, I think that's all of them, you pay zero tax. That's, at least on income, that's a huge benefit. So mm-hmm. New Mexico, alas, is not a zero income tax state. We do have that. You know, the rest of the report is basically how good or bad the rest of our tax policies are in terms of reciprocity agreements, in terms of filing those taxes, because it gets pretty hairy sometimes. Some states, like California, tend to be very aggressive in trying to, if you step foot or go on vacation in California, they want to charge you for the 5 or 8 or 10 days that you work in that state or something like that. So New Mexico's at a mediocre place. We should do better. We could do better. And, you know, I think while we struggle as a state to create and nurture companies like Google, companies like Facebook and whatnot, we certainly could lure some of those workers to New Mexico in this new modern day where you work and where you live are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another report, another way that the state can do something to improve itself.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. So you'd sent another email, but we had technical problems here this morning, like a power outage. And I wouldn't get the other one off. That's something else you wanted to talk about, had a We the People logo on it.
Oh, this is about your superintendent up there.
Oh, yes.
And the fact that they were recently let go by the school board, and I think that was a wise move. But, I watched the video, and the video is from a group that's actually based in the East Mountains of Albuquerque. They're a husband and wife team. The husband was involved in kind of whistleblowing about vaccine mandates and CRT policies at the national lab, Sandia National Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And he since left, and he and his wife have kind of set up a pro-freedom type organization, more grassroots. You know, we're a think tank. They're more of the grassroots, and they also seem to have gotten involved in the Project Veritas style reporting, and that's what they did. They made this video undercover of the Alamogordo school superintendent making some ill-advised remarks, both in the sense that I think he I'll use the term on the street, which is dissed the community of Alamogordo, and had some things to say that not only were harsh, but I think also untrue, you know, essentially seeming to imply that everybody in the county or the city was somehow racist, and that they have to teach or use the education system to create CRT in the classrooms, in the schools. And I am glad that he's been, they've split ways with him. And it's hard to wrap my head around the arrogance of this kind of mentality, that you should not serve the people that you are being paid to serve, but you should use your own values and try to impose them on people, no matter how misguided they may be. In this case, you know, really taking a hyper-aggressive approach on critical race theory and what is taught in the classroom to the kids. And it's if it can happen in Otero County and Alamogordo, it obviously can happen just about anywhere. There's something about government that gets you a little contact high, and you start to think that you are more important and more knowledgeable than anybody else, and that's unfortunate. And hopefully now that this video is out there, and now that the situation hopefully has been taken care of, we more people, more families, more parents will be actively engaged and really keeping an eye on what these people are saying and doing, especially doing when your kid comes home with some crazy ideas that have been espoused in the schools. So, interesting situation down there.
Yeah, and, definitely.
The folks are Freedom Families United. That's their website. They're trying to get this started on a national basis.
Right. Have you seen the video?
I have seen the video, yes.
Yes, yes. Okay, so we were talking about CRT and SEL, and, of course, he talked about having his team in place, so not sure we got them all out of there, but he is on paid administrative leave, and the assistant superintendent has been named in his place, so we'll just have to see how that plays out, plus a lawsuit involved with one entity here in Alamogordo and the public schools here on some other stuff that was very interesting as well. So, Paul, Tipping Point tomorrow night at 5:00, and we'll be sure to talk to you again next week. And where do you think you'll be next week?
Oh, I think I'll be in Albuquerque. Had a few busy weeks of travel, but this one was just a good opportunity to get out and see the folks in Lincoln County, enjoy the lovely 5 inches or so of snow they have here up on the mountain.
Yeah.
And would love to have made my way down the hill, but I've got a lot going on back up in Albuquerque, and so I'll be driving home, and hopefully the roads will be nice and clear coming down the mountain.
Well, I'm sure they are pretty good about doing that. 70 is usually pretty good about getting down to Tularosa and then heading that way. Don't go north, though, up to Capitan. Don't do that. Just come down 70 to Tularosa and then head back up. So, Paul, have a safe trip. Thanks for joining me this morning. We'll be sure to talk to you again next week as we discuss more of what's going on in that 90-day legislature or 60-day legislative session that's going on. Plus, we need to talk about these pay raises and wanting to extend the legislative session. So we'll talk about that next week, maybe.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Paul Gissing with the Rio Grande Foundation.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.